So for the last couple of weeks,
we've been talking about generosity, and we've been looking at how generosity doesn't have to be so much a burden that we bear, but it very much can be a blessing that we receive. And one of the obstacles to that blessing, however, is our attachment and our sense of ownership rather than stewardship. I like how A.W. Tozer put it in his book, The Pursuit of God. He says it like this. He says, there can be no doubt that this possessive clinging to things is one of the most harmful habits in life. And because it is so natural, it is rarely recognized for the evil that it is. But its outworkings are tragic. And so to kind of help ourselves this morning, I want to do a little exercise. I need you all to bear with me, a little trust here, okay? Stick with me. If you don't mind doing this, I want you to reach into your pocket or into your purse, and I would like for you to pull out your wallet, or maybe, if you're still living in the 19th century, a checkbook, or maybe you want to get your phone out and open up your Apple Pay or your Samsung wallet, whatever it is, whatever represents your money and your stuff, I need you to pull it out right now and hold it up when you got it, okay? Of course, the choir doesn't. Oh, this side seems to be well equipped. They're prepared. I don't know. All right, you got it up. Okay. You can gaze at it if you'd like. You can caress it. You can speak tenderly to it. You can call it by its name, my precious. What you hold in your hand is the 21st century temple. This is the temple to the god Mammon. And its message is directed to all of us, where it tells us that we are to worship it, that we are to find our security, that we're to find our identity, our well-being, all wrapped up in this little piece of leather. And so, of course, according to Jesus, this became a big area of trust, a symbol of trust. And so, as an act of trust this morning, here's what I'd like for all of us to do. I'd like you to take your wallet and hand it to the person next to you. Okay? Now, if you're married to the person or related to the person next to you, they don't count. You got to hand it to someone else.
All right. Thank you.
All right. Whoa, we got wallets flying. Very good, very good. Is everyone feeling a little tense right now? No? Let me help you out. What's going to happen next is our ushers, Mark and Brent, are going to come forward to receive an offering, and I want you to give like you have always wanted to give. Some of you aren't laughing. We can end the charades now. Give the wallets back. It's okay. Hand them back to the owner. Well done. You know, it's interesting. Some of us, our pulses jumped up quite a bit there, didn't they? It's hard to hand over something like that, isn't it? But you know, I've noticed that those of us who struggle to hand over our wallets, who struggle with generosity and with giving, we often find it easier after we've received something to give. But we've got to receive something ourselves first. So how I really want to begin this morning is by asking you to think of a time when you received an incredible gift from someone, something that you perhaps can't even put into words. Maybe it was an unexpected gift from a friend or something beyond your wildest dreams, something that was just so indescribable that it changed your life forever. Try to think of a moment like that. Now try to think about how you felt in that moment, how it moved you. I'm willing to bet in that moment when that happened, you didn't feel some burden or obligation or duty to repay your friend or your benefactor, but I bet you felt pure gratitude. And from that gratitude, you probably did feel the need to repay or to maybe pay it forward, or you just felt so overwhelmed that you felt like you had to do something. I had something like that happen to me once. When I was wrapping up my time at seminary at Trinity, I was driving home late one night. It was the end of March, and in Pittsburgh at that time, the days are warm, and so a lot of the snow will melt, and the nights are cold, and so they'll freeze. And so I was making my way down 65, Highway 65, and I was going around a bend and I hit a patch of ice and I smashed into a guardrail. It wasn't terrible. I managed to, you know, hit every panel along the side of my car. I blew out my tire, but I got home that night once I replaced my tire, and I actually drove my car back to Trinity the next day, which was at about an hour from where we lived. But the real problem came when I had to deal with my insurance agency. We've all had to deal with insurance agencies, I'm sure. So the first thing they said to me is, well, sir, the bad news is we're not going to repair your car. Your car is deemed total. Totaled. Now this thing, I've been driving back and forth every day to Ambridge, and it's total. But okay, but that wasn't the worst of it. The worst of it was the check they were going to cut for me, which was not even enough to buy a huffy bicycle, let alone replace my sweet Mitsubishi Lancer. Oh yeah, Oz Rally Edition. But that's okay. I was comfortable with driving a junker for a couple weeks. It's not a big deal. But that's when the real problem came, because my agent told me that, she said, oh, honey, no. You don't understand. Your car has been declared totaled. It is now uninsured and is uninsurable. You cannot drive that car anymore. Well, that presented a real problem, because I still had 5 weeks left of classes to take. I had a job waiting for me at the end, but I had no way to get to campus, and I had this measly little check that couldn't even buy a bicycle. I didn't know what I was going to do. I was in a real bind. And that's when one of my professors, Dr. Lori Thompson, did something incredible. And he actually lent me his car, his Jeep, for the next 5 weeks so that I can get back and forth to class and finish up my time at Trinity. Well, let me tell you, I was completely overwhelmed by that generosity. There is no way I could ever repay him at that time in my life. And that generosity has changed me from the inside out. It has changed how I see all of my possessions and everything that I've been blessed with. Has anything like that ever happened to you? Those kinds of moments change us. And that's what we've been exploring in this series on generosity. This morning, this is the last of our series on generosity, and over the last couple weeks, we've looked at the different facets of generosity. We've looked at how generosity isn't so much about surrendering our wallets as it is surrendering our hearts. Deacon Matt reminded us then in week two that our circumstances don't have to dictate our generosity. In fact, in many ways, our generosity can turn around and dictate our circumstances. And last week we read how what we have, what we own, what we've been blessed with, and what we then do with those things very much matters to God. That we can either hoard those things, consume those things, or we can sow them into God's kingdom. And so today we're going to tie it all together by looking at the ultimate source of our generosity, the foundation of it all, which, as Paul calls it, this inexpressible or indescribable gift of grace. In 2 Corinthians chapter 9, and we read last week's version, but if you look in your service sheet, we're looking at verses 11 through 15. Paul says it all there in the last verse. Why do we give? Why are we called to live generous lives? Because we are a people who have experienced the surpassing, inexpressible, indescribable grace of God. And so what I want to do this morning is I want to look at what Paul means by calling this indescribable grace. What's indescribable about it? And then I want to look at two challenges that we're going to face with this. So let's talk for a moment about this inexpressible gift that Paul mentions here. When Paul calls God's grace inexpressible, what he means is that words could never define what we've been given in Christ. That if we were to try to convey what we've been given to someone who's never experienced the grace of God, we could never convey the depths and the magnitude of all that we've experienced. We could never fully describe it. Think of it kind of like this, okay? We're all Arizonans, right? Imagine trying to describe to someone who's never been to the Grand Canyon what it's like to experience it. We could maybe hold up some pictures to show that person what it's like. We could talk about its depths, its colors, its sheer magnitude. But it's really impossible to capture the feeling of standing there for the first time at the edge, looking out at that vast beauty. And looking out at that changes our entire perspective. I was in AT&T yesterday, and I was talking to a guy. He was from northern Georgia. We lived in Atlanta, and we were talking about the mountains out east. And he was saying, man, I thought we had mountains out east, but then I moved here to the west, and I realized we have hills. It changed his whole view. Or think about describing a Phoenix summer to someone who's never lived through a Phoenix summer before. Sure, we can show them pictures of melting street signs. We can give them copies of Dante's Inferno and point them to that chapter on the innermost layer of hell. We can lock them inside a standing oven, turn it on full blast, but it would never quite capture the delight of living through a Phoenix summer. Amen?
Amen.
And let me tell you, once you live through a Phoenix summer, you are forever changed. You will never look at air conditioning the same way ever again. Well, in a similar way, God's grace is like that. It's a beauty that we cannot put into words. It's a freedom that we cannot completely express. And just like seeing the Grand Canyon changes how we view everything around us, all the other landscapes, and how surviving a Phoenix summer changes how we value every cool breeze, experiencing God's transforming grace changes everything about us. And it changes how we view everything that we have, everything that he's given us. We know it because we've experienced it. It's ours. And if we've truly experienced this amazing grace, it's going to change us. And it's going to burst out from within us because it's so overwhelming. It's just going to flood into every part of our lives. Which is a good thing because Paul tells us in 2 Corinthians that we're not just meant to experience this grace, but we're also meant to share it. We're to give it away. But that presents the first of our challenges. Because how exactly do we express the inexpressible? How do we share this with people who have never experienced it before? Well, as you can imagine, this is where generosity comes in. Generosity becomes our way to demonstrate God's grace, the grace that we've encountered to those who haven't encountered it. It's how we make the intangible tangible to others. And so we're called to live out this incredible gift that we received through our own generosity. Not so that we can be flashy or showboat or draw attention to ourselves. Quite the opposite. It's so that we can draw attention to Jesus. So that we can point people to the greatest gift, the most generous gift that we've ever received in Jesus. And so, yes, God calls us to give, but not because he needs something from us. Generosity is not about God needing something from us. He already has everything. And it's not even primarily about meeting needs, though we will meet needs, and that is absolutely important. But the primary reason why we are called to this life of generosity is to reflect this inexpressible grace to other people. It's every gift that we give, every act of kindness, every moment we pour out for another person. It's like holding up a mirror to the world and saying, this is a foretaste, a little sample of God's grace. It's not the whole picture, but man, this is a little sample. There's so much more there. Another way we can think about it is generosity is like a window through which others can begin to get a glimpse of God's heart. It's a way of pointing to others what God has given us. It's a way of saying to people, God didn't have to give us a thing. He didn't owe us anything. But in his lavish generosity, he gave us everything by giving us Jesus. Jesus, who lived the life that we couldn't live, who died the death that we deserve to die, who rose again so that we could have new, abundant lives. So when we let go of these things that we just want to hold on to so tightly, whether it's our resources or it's our time or it's our attention, what we're doing is we're opening up that window just a little more, just a little wider, so that others can see God's goodness. But then there's a second problem. And for this, we've got to be a little honest with ourselves this morning. We need to do a little heart check, okay?
So I've been talking to folks as we've been going through this series, and I've really appreciated their honesty. And some have mentioned how they want to live these generous lives. They want to live into this calling, but it's so hard because it's so easy to see this thing as mine. I've earned it. I've worked hard for it. This is my thing. And I know God has blessed me with it, but it's just hard to let go. I get it. If that's you, you might be saying this morning, Father Chase, I want to be generous. I just find it hard to do so. Or let's go even deeper. You might say, I want to be generous, but I'm not even there. I want to desire to be generous, but I don't even desire it yet. And if that's you, it's okay. I sympathize. I get it. Listen, my last name is Campbell. I am a self-declared cheap Scotsman. I very much gift the challenge of living into this generosity. You know, when the gospel came to the British Isles, it said that the Brits loved the gospel because it offered them authority. And the Irish loved the gospel because it gave them freedom. And the Scots, they loved the gospel because it was free. So, as a Campbell, I get it. I do. I sympathize. And guess what else? Paul gets it. Paul knows the struggle. Y'all remember what he said in Romans 7? I love what he says. He says, I know the things that I ought to do, but truthfully, I can't always seem to do it. I can will to do those things, but then when it comes time, I don't actually do it. I determine to do good things, but then, dagnabbit, I don't really do it. I decide not to do bad things, but then I go ahead and do it anyway. You see, Paul gets the struggle. I get the struggle. And the beautiful part of it is God is sympathetic to our struggle. Friends, God is not sitting above us this morning, looking down at those of us who are struggling with generosity, saying, you know what you need to do? You need to buck up and you need to get your act together, pull yourself up by your bootstraps and get going with this. No, God knows that we are terrible at transforming our hearts. And our hearts very much dictate what our hands do, okay? God is sympathetic to that. And so the good news is that is where even more inexpressible grace is being offered to us this morning. Here's what I mean by that. Friends, if God's grace is what saves us to begin with, and it's God's grace that transforms us, then we can be absolutely certain that it will be God's grace and His grace alone that will enable us to live into these lives of generosity. It is very easy for us to be overwhelmed by the kind of generosity that we're called to. But the good news is God does not leave us on our own to figure it all out. Sure, He invites us into this process. This is not a passive process, okay? You're not going to wake up one morning and say, man, God's changed my heart. Suddenly I just want to give everything away. It's not going to happen like that. We are invited into this work. But at the end of the day, it's always God's grace that carries us through. This is something that we were actually talking about this past Wednesday in our Wednesday Bible study. A little shameless plug there. We were looking at the book of Titus, and it was actually Julie who pointed this out, that Paul writes these words, "For the grace of God has appeared, training us to renounce ungodliness and worldly passions and self-controlled lives, upright and godly lives in the present age." And so what Paul is saying is, yes, like an athlete that's training, we're invited to participate in all of this. We make choices, we show up, we do the work. But at the end of the day, it is always God's grace that enables us, that grows us, that transforms the heart. So if you're feeling like you're struggling with this generosity, take a deep breath. You are not alone. God very much wants to walk down this journey with you. So here's a practical thing that we all can do this week to participate in this training that we're called to. Very easy thing to do. Every day this week when you wake up, here's what I want you to do. I want you to say a simple prayer with me, okay? Say, Lord, show me one way today to be generous. Lord, open my eyes to some way I can bless somebody else, whether it's through my time or through my words or through my resources. And then here's the important part. and give me the courage to respond. Lord, open my eyes to being generous and give me the courage to respond. It's a simple prayer. It's a simple step, but I promise you, when you invite God's grace to work in your life like that, he always shows up. God is always there working in your life when you ask him to. You will begin to notice opportunities to give in ways that you would have otherwise missed. And here's the thing. I don't think God's going to call you to some big act. No, God always starts small in the training program. He builds up. He's not going to ask you to give your car away for 5 weeks like he did with Lori. It's a small act. But don't dismiss those small acts, because when God works through those small acts, he is able to bless others immensely. So what this might look like for you is that maybe God calls you to take a meal to a set of new parents. Or maybe God calls you to pay for the person's coffee behind you in line. Or maybe God calls you to simply spend 15 minutes listening, investing in the teens of this church. Listen, if you all truly just sat down and just invested 15 minutes in the lives of our teens, it would bless them immensely. All right, little warning though, I'm a dad with some teens, so if you take me up on this offer, just know they might start saying things like, that Skibbity Rizzler caught in 4K being sus, major L, not bussin', dog, what? Trust me, they're speaking their own language, they're speaking words. Do what I do and just nod your head, pat them on the back, and pray for their soul. Ohio Rizzler, right?
On skib.
It could be something as small as walking your neighbor's trash can back for them. It could be simply sending a word of encouragement to someone who is struggling. It's not about the amount. It's about the heart. It's about a heart that says, God, you have given me everything. And so I want to give back. I've been transformed by you. This is flowing out of my life. I want to direct it for your glory. I want to give thanks to you for this. You know, so often we see this kind of generosity live through very simple yet extraordinary ways. Makes me think of a guy named Albert Lexie. Albert Lexie was a humble shoe shiner from, of all places, Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. I know, even good things can come from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania once in a while. Albert shined shoes at UPMC Children's Hospital for 30 years. Now, as you can imagine, shining shoes earned him a very modest salary. He charged $3 per shoe shine. He also had a little tip jar. And if you can imagine, if you're a shoe shiner charging $3 per shine, that tip jar is probably really important to you, right? Well, that's where the incredible part of his story comes in. Because from day one, Albert made it his mission to donate every dime that went into that tip jar back to Children's Hospital, back to the free care fund, which helps families pay their medical bills. At the end of 30 years, Albert had donated over $200,000 to that fund. Now think about that for a moment. Here's a guy who had every reason to cling on to every dollar in his wallet. He could have said, I really need this for my own financial security. But instead, he was someone who decided to just give it all away. Not out of obligation, not because he was asked to, but for one simple reason. He has been a person who's been touched by God's grace. And that grace flowed out from him. And he believed in giving back. And so his story is a powerful example of what we've been talking about in this series. That generosity isn't about digging deep into our wallets as much as it is about the posture of our hearts. You fix the posture, you don't got to worry about how deep you'll dig. It'll happen naturally. We can give all because we have been given so much through Christ. And so here's the challenge I want to leave you with. How can you and I, like Albert, more and more every day live into this grace in such a way that it overflows out of our lives? What small or large steps is God calling us to take so that we can reflect this inexpressible grace to the world around us, to a world that needs this grace? As we wrap up this morning, remember, everything that we've talked about in this last 4 weeks comes down to this. God's grace is the foundation of all of our generosity. We don't give to get something in return. We don't give because we have to. We don't give because it makes us feel good. We give because we have already been given everything in Jesus. Friends, next time you open your wallet, remember, this is no longer the temple of mammon. That like you and me, this has been redeemed by Jesus. And so now this is a window through which other people can start to get a glimpse of God's goodness. And so maybe, just maybe, like Albert, our small acts of generosity will begin to show someone else this inexpressible gift that is being offered to them. And that is exactly what Jesus did for us, isn't it? He didn't just talk about grace. He didn't preach about grace. He didn't just sing about grace. He showed it to us. He gave it to us. And so now, friends, it's our turn. Amen.